As he got up and walked into the kitchen, Christopher put his hand over his eyes and said, "Mummy, where did that bright light come from?" I tickled him and didn't answer his question, then I sent him back to play with his little brother. "Michael," I said, "you know one of the things I love is going to the prayer group in Maynooth. I have met wonderful people there." Angel Michael gave me a big smile and said, "Tell me now what is really on your mind." I took a deep breath and I told Michael about being in my mum's house in Ilkeslip and about the man leaving the house who had invited us as a family to this prayer group of born-again Christians in Dublin. "You know, I always feel nervous about having to go somewhere new," I said. Angel Michael started to laugh at me. He reached out and took my hand. "Lorna, you won't have to stand on your head or do anything like that," he said. "Don't worry." We both laughed. Michael continued, "Just remember, when you go to the prayer group in Maynooth you should pray and praise God. Do so the same way, just be free, Lorna, in your prayer and praise. There will be a lot of families there, so in this way it will be different. When the time comes, Lorna, you will go as a family to this prayer group with your parents, but it won't happen for quite some time." As always, Michael was right. It was to be many years later that we all went together and, when it did happen, it was a turning point in my life which brought me much closer to my father. Christopher peeped in the kitchen door. "I can see the light again, Mummy." Angel Michael disappeared. I picked Christopher up and we played wheelbarrow for a little while. In the new year, just as the angels had said, I became pregnant. Joe and I were very happy about the pregnancy, even though my heart was heavy as I knew that this little baby wasn't going to stay. When a woman becomes pregnant, the baby's soul already knows if its mother will miscarry, if it will be aborted, stillborn or deformed. Regardless of what happens, the baby's soul still loves its parents and will always be by their side. It will be there to help them through life. If you have ever lost a baby, never forget that that little baby's soul chose you to be its mother or father. It actually chose you before it was even conceived. That little soul loves you and was full of joy that you were able to conceive it. In the Bible you read sometimes that God already knew you before you were conceived. This is because we were already spiritual beings in heaven, where we were all queuing up to leave heaven and be born on earth. We have an awful lot of abortions in the world, but one must remember that even if a mother decides to have an abortion, that little soul already knows that its mother may do this and, even knowing this, has already chosen this woman to be its mother, even if that means that they are only conceived and never actually born. The little soul has chosen that mother and will love her no matter what. It is unconditional love. I would like every mother to remember this, particularly any woman who has had an abortion. Maybe a young girl had an abortion because she was afraid of life, of the world out there. Or maybe she was scared of her parents or felt she had no one in whom to confide. Remember, that baby's soul loves you and never for one moment holds it against you that you did not give birth to it. It already knew what would happen and it will pour its love onto you. I remember, some years later when people started to come to me, a woman came to me to seek guidance. At one stage, she said to me, "I had a few miscarriages." "Yes," I said. "The angels are telling me that." At that moment, I remember turning and looking towards my kitchen door and there, sitting on the floor, were five little children, five little souls surrounded by light, and they were beautiful, a beautiful souls and beautiful little children. They turned and smiled at their mother. She couldn't see them but I told her what I could see and she was filled with joy. I was able to tell her that some of them were boys and some were girls, and also what they looked like. That made her so happy. The little souls told me to let their mother know that they have always been around her and have always been with her. "You know, I've always felt in the past that they were around me," the mother said to me. "Sometimes I even thought I felt their little hands touching my leg. I can even feel them now, touching me." I had to smile, because at that moment they were up around her chair and they were touching her. "Yes, they are," I said with a smile, "and you are blessed that you can feel the touch of your own little children who God has sent to visit you. Remember, When the time comes for you to pass over, those five little souls will have their hands stretched out to you to bring you to heaven as well. Thank you, the woman said. I never told anyone about the presence of my little babies around me, and I never told anyone that I felt them touch me. I was afraid to tell anyone. I was afraid that people would think I was mad. One thing people must remember is that there are millions of people who are actually having spiritual experiences, but they are afraid to say it. There are plenty of people who believe that angels are there helping them, and who actually sometimes feel them, but often they say to themselves, maybe I didn't see them, maybe it was my imagination. It is wonderful to acknowledge them and to say, yes, I do believe in angels. Yes, I do believe in God. Many times we don't do this. Many times we only say these things when we are bereaved, very ill, or desperate in some ways. Only then do we turn to God and pray. We are often afraid to acknowledge God and His angels. As you grow, spiritually, you will find that you won't be afraid to acknowledge God, His angels or any spiritual being that has come from the heavens. During the first few months of my pregnancy, Joe did not look well either. He complained a lot with pains in his stomach and the doctors sent him to the hospital for tests. They said it was a rumbling appendix, but that he was not sick enough to operate and so he was sent home with medicine. Joe continued to be in a lot of pain and, unable to keep food down, he lost a lot of weight that he couldn't afford to lose. I could see the deterioration in Joe. The gray around his internal organs that I had seen before we married had got darker, and around the area of his appendix I could see a swollen mass of red. I gave out to the angels. I told them it was so unfair to see Joe suffering like that for months and months on end. I begged them to help. The doctor said he could do nothing. He apologized to Joe but said that the hospital wouldn't remove his appendix unless he was critically ill. I miscarried at 3 months. For about a week before my little unborn baby left, the angels kept touching my belly and beams of light would flash straight out. Many times I asked, can my little baby not stay? But I was always told, no. Sometimes Joe asked me why was I sad and I would tell him it was just the hormones and to take no notice of me. I never told him what the angels had said. No matter how sick Joe was, he always tried to help around the house. On that fateful day, I had been helping Joe to stack turf in the shed and I told him that I wanted to go in and lie down on the couch, that I was tired. I fell asleep for a while and Joe came in and said the job was done, all the turf was in the shed. The children stayed outside playing. I was going to get up to make tea, but Joe said he would make it instead. Joe was only in the kitchen a minute when I started to feel horrific pain. I could feel the life going out of my body. I called out to Joe urgently. He came immediately and sat beside me on the couch and said I looked very pale. He went into the bedroom to get a pillow to put under my head. I felt my soul holding my baby's soul and rising out of my body, going towards a beautiful light. I knew my baby had died and that I was dying too. I was rising towards the light, carrying my baby. The pain had gone. I was traveling through a tunnel of silver and gold, an enormous tunnel made of shiny white angels. I couldn't see the end of the tunnel as its path curved. I knew without being told that I was on my way to heaven, and I felt no fear, just tremendous joy. I could see other souls on their way to heaven, too. They looked human in appearance and were dressed in brilliant white robes. I call the color white because I don't have any other word, but it was much more brilliant than the color we call white. Through their robes, I could also see the light of their souls, and this radiated up through their faces, making them look more pure and radiant than they ever had been on this earth. When I got to a particular point, a beautiful angel stood in front of me and stopped me from going further. I knew without being told why she was blocking my way, but she spoke to me in the sweetest, gentlest and most compassionate of voices. Lorna, you should not have come with your baby. You must return. I don't want to go back, I said to the beautiful angel, but deep down in my soul I knew it was not my time to come to heaven. Turn around, Lorna, and look back down the tunnel, said the angel. I turned and I could see Joe holding on to my still body lying on the couch, trying to feel a pulse, a breath, shaking me, saying, come back, come back, you can't die on me. He was praying as he talked. I turned back to the angel and said, no matter how much I love Joe and the children, I still don't want to go back to the human world. Why would I go? Here I am in the presence of God. Here I am perfect in every way. I feel unbelievably alive. I feel no pain and no sadness of any kind. Why do I have to go? You have no choice, said the beautiful angel. You have to return, Lorna. I looked at the soul of my little baby in my arms. He smiled at me. His blue eyes sparkled and he was radiant with life. The beautiful angel in front of me put out her arms to take him. A powerful authority entered my soul. I knew I had no choice, that I had to go back, that I wasn't meant to be there. I kissed my baby, holding him very tight and then, very reluctantly, put him into the beautiful angel's arms. I really did not want to let him go, even though I knew that someday I would see him again and that in the meantime this beautiful snow-white angel would take care of him. As soon as I had handed over my baby, it was as if God took hold of my soul and brought it back gently through the tunnel, back to the house in Maynooth and to the couch where my body lay. My soul started to enter my body slowly, but the pain was horrific. I felt every pore, every organ, every bone, every bit of flesh and muscle. Life was being poured back into a body which had been dead for a few minutes. It was horrific pain but, for some reason I am unable to understand, I couldn't cry out, I couldn't make a sound. Eventually I heard Joe's voice. Lorna, thank God you are alive. I thought you were dead. I managed to give him a weak little smile. I lay there for hours, with the angels holding me, and I wouldn't let Joe leave me, even to call a doctor or an ambulance. Deep down inside I knew I was going to live, that I was meant to live. I never told Joe that I had died for those few minutes, he did not need to know that and it would have only frightened him more than he had been already. Eventually, Joe went to the phone box and called my parents and they came up to the house. I asked Joe not to say anything about what had happened. All I told Mum and Da was that I had been feeling unwell all day and had started to bleed. Joe and Da brought me into the hospital and Mum stayed and minded Christopher and Owen. At the hospital they were very concerned that I seemed so weak and, of course, I didn't tell them all of what happened earlier that day, either. They did a scan and said they could see nothing, there was no sign of the baby. The doctor came to see me and he held my hand and said he was very sorry. You lost your baby. It must have happened before you got to the hospital. As the doctor was leaving, Da walked in on his own and said, I'm so sorry you lost the baby. I know how much this baby meant to you. He had tears in his eyes as he talked with me. I had never seen my father so upset over something to do with me. The doctors said I needed to stay in the hospital, and when I was settled in the ward Joe and Da went home. A few days later they did a D&C. Joe came to visit me every night. He was worried about me and sad that we had lost the baby. 2 weeks later I was discharged, but I was still very weak and spent a lot of time in bed. I was so glad to get home and hold my children in my arms and hug and kiss them. It was years later when I told Joe more about what happened that day, the day that I died and went some of the way to heaven and back. I told him as a way of consoling him in the last few months of his life. Many of us have a fear of death, but there is no need for it. Greater than at the moment of death there is no pain, no discomfort. Some people may have pain right up to that last moment, but then there is none. You have no fear and anxiety and you go freely. Death is like birth. I know you might think that's a strange thing to say, but you are being born into a new life. You actually don't die, it's only this physical shell that you leave, like an empty eggshell. I know there is a place called hell, that it actually exists, but God has never shown me anyone being sent there. I can only go by what I have seen myself, and from what I have seen, God forgives everyone no matter what they have done. I know this is hard for us to understand. A lot of the time we look for justice and revenge. So it is very hard for us to understand, but when our soul stands in front of God after death, it feels so much love and desire to be with God that it wants so much to stay there, and it asks forgiveness in a very deep and real way, forgiveness for all that was done on this earth out of the frailty of the human condition. And God in His infinite mercy forgives His child. We are all nothing but children in the presence of God, who is our Father. Your soul is perfect. When your soul is free of your body, it can travel through the universe to places you could never even imagine. How can I help you to understand how wonderful this feeling is? There is no way to express it, no way to tell you, unless you have experienced it yourself. And most of us have to wait until we die to do this. When you die, you are not on your own. You are accompanied all the time by angels and those spirits who have gone before you. You won't want to come back. Why? When you have no more pain, no more tears, no more sadness, would you want to get back into a human body? That is why people, when they die, do not want to return, and the only thing that brings a soul back to a human body is being sent back by God, because it is not yet time. We have become very materialistic as a society, and so frequently we look at death and ask, is this it? I rot away and there is nothing more? I assure you there is more, a much more. I hope that through the books I write I can communicate this and help people to understand. Believe what I say. Believe that, yes, there is more, much more, even though I may not be able to prove it or show it to you now. It is proven to everyone when they die. Some people feel that that's too late, a waiting to die to see the proof. People are given proof while they are alive, but sometimes they have to look or listen very hard to recognize them. Chapter 17, 3 knocks on the window. A few days after I got out of hospital, the weather started to get very cold. Joe was back working with the local county council, even though it was only a temporary contract. And I was out in the shed getting turf for the fire when I heard my name being called. I turned around but saw no one. I brought the bucket of turf into the house, and there, sitting in the chair beside the fire, was an angel. He startled me because he was very striking, very different from any other angel I had ever seen. It was as if he was made of jagged glass, of perfect shattered splinters which were all identical in size and which all reflected light. His face and his features were very sharp, and as he stood up he was about 12 feet tall, his head almost touching the ceiling. Very unusually, music seemed to come from every part of him, enchanting, soft, mellow music, quite unlike anything I have ever heard before. It wasn't human music, but the sort of music I could imagine hearing in heaven. "Hello, Lorna," he said in a very soft voice. "My name is Kaffers. Something special is going to happen for you and Joe, but particularly for Joe." "Angel Kaffers, can you tell me when?" I asked. "Soon, Lorna. You will know when the angels descend on your home." Then Angel Kaffers rose out of the chair and was gone. Weeks passed, I don't know how many, and the weather got colder still. Joe remained very sad about losing our baby, and I was too. But I had known in advance, and so I had had more time to get used to it. The weather was getting very bad, and it was ice cold outside, a really, really cold day, and it was snowing extremely heavily. As he came back from work, Joe decided to get extra groceries, and I always remember him arriving at the door with his arms full of bags of shopping. As Joe walked in, he started to say, "God, it's cold." But as soon as he said the word "God," angels descended on our little home. It was as if angels were coming through every part of the house, through the roof, through the walls, even up through the floors. Every atom of the house seemed to be full of angels. It's something that had happened to me before, and still happens when something very special is about to occur. I knew this was the something special that Angel Kaffers had spoken of, something special for Joe. Joe continued, apostrophe. "You never know, tomorrow morning we might not be able to get outside the hall door with that snow." It was stacking up pretty high outside, And there were reports on the radio about roads blocked and traffic not being able to go up to Layla because the road was covered in snow and ice. That evening we had the fire going, there was a power cut and so this was our only light, and I remember feeling nice and snug in our little cottage. The children were in bed asleep, we had plenty of fuel and food in and it felt lovely, it felt safe. Around 10 o'clock Joe and I were sitting at the fire enjoying tea and sandwiches and we talked about the baby we had lost. As we sat there we gave it a name. The room was shining with the angels and I noticed some angels going into our bedroom. When they came back into our little living room I heard them say of Christopher and Owen, they are sleeping peacefully, like little angels. Everything became silent, there wasn't a sound. I got up out of the chair and peeped out the window, it was pitch dark outside, except for the snow, which left a glow in the darkness. I was a little anxious and excited. I did not know what the angels were going to allow to happen, but I knew it was going to be special. The next minute there came three knocks on the window, of course, Joe and I nearly jumped out of our skins. He said, "Oh God, somebody must be outside." As he was getting up out of the chair, three knocks came on the door as well. I said, "They must be freezing. Maybe it's Mum and D.A., maybe they had to come up for something. They are out of their minds to travel on a night like this," Joe said. Joe was surrounded by a whole host of angels, but, of course, he didn't realize it. Suddenly I knew what was going on and started to laugh. Joe said, "Why are you laughing?" "There is no one outside the door," I said. "I know who that was."
"Who?"
asked Joe. "It was our baby," I said. "He was saying goodbye. He was just giving you a physical sign to help you to believe, by knocking. Go away out of that."
"Don't be talking such nonsense," Joe said.
"Go out and open the hall door and you won't see any footsteps in the snow." I had to laugh again at the expression on Joe's face. The room was full of angels. I knew angels had brought my baby's soul to knock on the window and now he had gone back with other angels. I didn't need to see him, our little son, he did this for his dad, to help him to believe. Joe opened the hall door. The snow was up against it, it was nearly a foot deep and it fell in onto the mat, the freezing cold air came in, too. Joe looked out and he could not believe it, how there were no footsteps in the snow. He looked and he looked to see if he could find any footsteps in the snow, of animals, birds, of any kind. He stepped out into the snow. Joe went white in the face, he couldn't believe it. He looked at me and shook his head, saying, "Oh my God, that's just too much." Eventually, he came back in, closed the hall door and I said, "Don't worry, sit down by the fire and get warm. That was your son, our baby, saying goodbye. He was leaving with all the angels to go to heaven, off to where he should be. Now, you can let him go." Joe cried there at the fire, we held each other in our arms and we both cried. We were very peaceful, though. "Wasn't it wonderful that our little baby did that for us?" I said to him, that the angels allowed something like that to happen so we would know that our baby's okay, that it's all right. That was our child thanking us for being his parents. D.A. had a habit of dropping in to see us out of the blue, mostly in the evening. I always loved this. One day, I was out working in the garden, pulling weeds and hoeing between the rows of potatoes. We were now growing most of our own fruit and vegetables, and Christopher was helping me. Although he was only about 5, he was always anxious to help. As I heard D.A.'s car pull up outside the gate, I turned around. The two boys cried out, "Granddad." Christopher ran through the potatoes and tried to open the gate, with Owen toddling behind. The gate was tied with string, so I picked Owen up and helped Christopher to untie it. The gate opened and Owen wiggled in my arms to get down. Christopher greeted D.A. as he got out of the car. He was in fishing gear and wearing his favorite hat, a tweed hat with colorful fishing flies in it. He'd had the same hat for years and he wore it every opportunity he got, and he always treated it with loving care. Dia greeted the kiddies with a pet on the head. Day he always did that, and sometimes I would say to him, "They are not dogs you are petting, Dia." And he would laugh at me. "The garden is looking great," said Dia, as Christopher pulled him in the direction of the potatoes. "When the children are finished showing you all the vegetables we're growing, come in and I'll have tea ready," I said. Owen, who was now about 3, was first back into the kitchen and arrived with a tumble and roll. He was born prematurely and, as a result of not having developed fully before birth, his hips swiveled much more than normal. He could move so fast that I would hold my breath as I watched him, and he could tumble over 3 or 4 times and still end up back on his feet. It was as if he was double-jointed from the waist down. Many times, when I saw Owen tumbling and I was holding my breath, I would see flashes of angels spinning around him in every direction, protecting him. Seeing the way he tumbled, you would expect him to break bones, but he never did. The doctors in the hospital said that Owen's hips wouldn't develop properly before the age of 7, and I often said to Joe that I couldn't wait for Owen to reach that age so that I could breathe easily. "Lorna," my father asked, "would you and Joe and the kiddies like to come on holiday with your mum and me in the summer, down to the little cottage in Mullingar?" I was delighted. Joe and I had never had a holiday, we had never even gone on honeymoon. I was thrilled at the idea of a break. "That would be great," I said. "Of course we'd love to come. I hope Joe can get the time off." Joe had recovered from his appendicitis, but I could still see the red mass of energy around his appendix, so knew it would flare up again. He had recently got a job at the local carpet factory. It was hard physical work in unpleasant conditions, washing and dyeing wool, and most of the time he worked the night shift. This work can't have helped his health, but we needed the money. One of the few benefits of this job, other than the small, but regular, income, was that Joe had access to cheap undyed wool. I had done little knitting as a child, but now with access to this wool, I took to knitting with a vengeance, even though all the jumpers I knitted were the one color, or the color of sheep. I knitted around sweaters for the children, for Joe and for Dia. My Dia loved his sweater and wore it a lot of the time he wasn't working. This day, Dia and I sat down and had a cup of tea and talked for a few minutes. The children were delighted too. They asked their granddad so many questions about where the cottage was, what it was like, whether there were trees in the garden. "The garden is wild, with lots of trees and grass as tall as you. There is a boreen as well, all overgrown like a jungle. You'll have a great time. When can we go?" they kept asking, and I told the children, "Not until your granddad and dad gets holiday." Dia had his tea and he went outside into the garden with the children for a little while. "See you, Lorna. I'm going now," he called out. The day before we were due to go on holiday was a really warm, sunny day with hardly a breeze, but as I was hanging washing on the line, this strong wind suddenly came up. I knew it wasn't an ordinary breeze and I started to laugh. "I bet that is you, Hosus," I said. "What are you doing blowing away my washing on me? What are you up to?" Then he just appeared. As usual, he was playing tricks and trying to make me laugh. Then he disappeared again, just like a light evaporating into the air. He is a wonderful angel. That day, I caught my son Christopher standing there, looking in the same direction and staring, and I knew by his eyes that he saw what I saw. He never mentioned it then, nor since. Maybe he has forgotten about it. Maybe, though, when he reads this book he will remember. That I don't know. I will just wait and see. The day we were off on holiday, I was worrying how we were all going to fit into the car. DA's car was not big, and we had a lot of luggage and all the changes of clothes for the children. The children were out in the garden watching anxiously for their granny and granddad, and when the car pulled up to the gate, the children let out such screams of joy. Christopher and Owen immediately climbed into the car with their toys, and Dia and Joe somehow managed to fit everything into the boot. Off we went towards Mullingar, in County Westmeath, some 50 miles away from Maynooth. Joe talked quite a bit, but I stayed quiet within myself and played with the children.
We got to the cottage late. It was almost getting dark, but there was a beautiful full moon and a bright sky packed with stars. The little stone cottage was lovely, nice and cozy. I just felt happy to be the dot. Mum and Da slept downstairs and we all slept upstairs. I slept really well that first night.